2, 3, 4.
I think a good teacher is someone that comes to school not for the fact that they're getting paid and they come to school for the student.
It's a boy thing.
What I think makes a good teacher is a teacher that's willing to connect with their students, make an effort to get to know their students.
It's a boy thing.
Like when the teacher's approachable and you don't feel intimidated when you go up to talk to them.
It's a boy thing.
Hi, Chris. I love how we're going to do the order. Welcome back. We haven't seen each other. We didn't manage to catch up in the holidays in Wanaka. Our times didn't align, but here we are. That's right, week 3, back into it. And it really astounded me that it's week 3 when I was talking to a group of boys yesterday at morning tea, because we've got a group of boys that are going to do the Sheila Win competition. Otago Boys hasn't had a group of boys do one of these for quite some years. And here it's in week 11. So I was like, we've got to get a hustle on, man. So I'm a little bit astounded. Anyway, how's the year started for you?
Oh, it's been pretty awesome. I'm very happy with all the boys who are trooping into my newly upgraded class, because I put LEDs underneath the whiteboard and I bought a lava lamp.
Chris was proudly showing me these new things before we started recording, and he did own that he loves to talk a lot when he's teaching, and that the boys will be looking at the lava lamp. And I said, well, what happens? It'll be interesting to see what happens with your results. And he said, what if they go up? So this time next year, let's see if your results have actually gone up.
If the results have improved, I'm going to put it down to the lava lamp, and I'm going to recommend that everyone installs one in their classroom. I love it. I love the lava lamp, and it's the boys love it too. Like, I'm getting so much good feedback about it.
So. It's probably because our classrooms, and I am using the plural there, are very barren. So now you've given a little something to the space. I do quite like the LED, but I also like a lava lamp because, like, one of my sons got LED strip lights for his bedroom over the holiday period, and the other son, same bedroom this year, he also got a lava lamp. So you're kind of rocking the vibe that's happening in the room next door to my
love it. Bedroom. See, and so essentially I'm decorating my classroom like a young boy's bedroom. How's your year starting?
It has started off really, really well, obviously really busy. I am fizzing, and I know I was bombarding you yesterday with it. The English department got 3 scholarships at Otago Boys, so that was really cool. I ran the scholarship tutorials last year, and 3 of my boys gained scholarships, and one of those was an outstanding scholarship. So I am just wrapped. I can't wipe the smile off my face. I'm immensely proud of them. They're all success stories, but I think one is one that I have to highlight. I won't use his name, obviously, but he came to New Zealand, I believe, 6 years ago from Sri Lanka, and could barely speak English when he arrived in New Zealand. And the first time that he received excellence grades in his external English examinations was last year. He was in my class last year. First time, he was just like, oh my God, I've never got excellence excellence credits externally before in English. On a bit of a whim, he decided to join his mates in the English scholarship tutorial. So yeah, I'm going to participate now. And then obviously he has received a scholarship in English. It's like, what a cool success story. Just phenomenal. So that's really making me like just so, so happy.
I'm so happy to hear it. I think that the whole English scholarship project is such a big deal, isn't it? It's always a voluntary activity for us as teachers. It's voluntary for the students. Mm. It's a huge amount of additional work on both sides. When the students achieve it, it does reward the input.
Yes, I agree with you. And I think I was texting, another colleague who's at Mount Aspiring Drama. She always gets scholarships. She messaged this morning to say one of her girls had got a scholarship. And we were just texting about obviously the scholarships and the excitement that we feel, because, you feel this excitement for your students when they're part of they're timetabled into your class. But I think it's because of the voluntary act of scholarship and how much additional time you and the student or students both give to it, that you feel an even greater sense of probably excitement around it, and because it's such a beautiful accolade, like, how cool. So, yeah, I feel like I'm floating on air as if, you know, I'm the student's guy. I didn't get the scholarships, but, you know, I'm just so rapt, so proud.
It's a very challenging assessment system. So to achieve that scholarship really is quite meaningful. And it's cool for us to know that our students are going out to their futures with those qualifications on board. I mean, it really does make that 13 years of education quite meaningful for the ones that achieve it. And we do put the work in, but it needs to be acknowledged, so do they. In every subject, the scholarship standard will always require quite a significant amount of additional scholarly activity during the year. I often feel more nervous, I think, about the scholarship outcomes than I do about the NCEA ones, because I wonder if it's because the NCEA ones are a known quantity to some extent. You kind of get what you expect most of the time. Individual students vary, but across the cohort. Whereas I think with the scholarship, it's every individual really, isn't it?
Yeah, no, that's a valid way to put it. No, and that's true. And I had actually been spending a bit of time. I don't think I felt nervous in the build-up to the release but I certainly was spending a bit of time thinking about it and going, how's this going to play out? It just goes to show the difference that you can make and the importance of also having really strong programs that have high expectation, as we keep talking about, but academic rigor. And I've been a firm believer in, yes, delivering a scholarship tutorial that sits alongside level three classes, but I do believe that your level three English classes should actually be elevating the students in their thinking, in their skills. And I know you'll be exactly the same, but I don't know if everyone approaches it in that way. In fact, I'm confident not everyone approaches it in that way. And it is our job to really create these programs at level three that are stimulating, they're rewarding. They are asking the students to go above and beyond in their thinking, their critical thinking skills, and their literacy skills as well. And so it's just a really cool way to finish that year. My first year at Otago Boys, basically. That's, you know, look at that. Yeah, it's cool. My team also did really great work with all their NCA classes. The results for the department were really pleasing. So it's a really positive start to the year.
Oh, that's really great to hear. We had some good outcomes as well. But what I quite liked, I think one of the things that made me happy was, as a team, we acknowledged the good outcome, but then started to interrogate it for where we could learn. Mm-hmm. And for us, we had some very good outcomes from internals, a lot of excellences at both levels, two and three. And we didn't get the same number of excellences in the external exams as we got in the internal papers. And we're pretty confident that we're marking accurately. We know we use really robust assessment practices, like they have to use exam.net for their writing portfolio. Like, there's no outside interference with their internals. But that sort of, we decided to call it underperformance in the externals in relation to excellences, was sort of our targeted area for interrogation. And the teachers all went back to the students who they thought might be concerned about that result, looked at the papers, discussed. We kind of, as a group, have come to a plan for our attack for this year to sort of support the boys to be prepared to get that best possible outcome in the externals. That is new and is informed by what happened last year. And I don't want to misrepresent it. Like, we got the students achieved outstanding results. But there's always room for growth. There's always something to do better, isn't there?
That's what I was going to say. You can always be better. And actually, we had a similar conversation in the department, and it is a goal for me as the head of the department as well, to look at how we can keep raising excellence results externally, because I do believe that we can have that value-added moment, that we can make an impact, that we can make a difference. So I'm kind of interested to see how your year tracks along with this and the things that you guys do in the department, because, of course, that will be useful for me as well. Plus, yeah. I also just really love having these pedagogical discussions because that's what we're doing. We're looking at our practice. Yeah. We've got to be reflective and we've got to look at, okay, what can we do to change? How can we shift things?
Very interesting thing for us because we, you know, we've sort of come to a few conclusions. Certainly, we've got a course of action ready for the year. Is that we saw that whilst we taught these really interesting programs unified around a set of genre specifications or a critical theory that underpinned all of the teaching, and that was very much manifest in the students' coursework during the year. Quite often, when we got to the exam, the boys, largely because the questions cue this, reverted to the kind of standard critical theory responses. And so if they were asked about setting, then they talked about setting. Now, they'd spent all year talking about this concept, say in my level two class, of the teenage antihero and how that was kind of a framing device for all of our inquiry. They didn't quite have the confidence because they would have had to have inserted that thinking to bring that into the exam. And so in a lot of ways, this thing we'd spent all year working on didn't show up in their exams. And as a result, they were kind of undercooked in the areas they did answer on. And so they typically, we got like more than half the students got merits in the exams. And so a good half of those should have got excellences, whereas essentially a third of them did. And so our thinking is actually, it wasn't that the teaching was flawed. It was that we need to help the students to bridge between the learning that they're doing and the exam, because the exam's just this generic, quite formulaic, and yet our teaching programs have really deviated from that formula. And so it's about, and it's up to us. I think it's the teacher's job to communicate that bridge and to help them to practice the skill of introducing their body of knowledge at the end of year exam, rather than relying on answers that they kind of think the examiner wants.
So part of that's going to be even more explicit teaching, isn't it? Like you're going to be more pointed. And of course, we keep talking about explicit teaching last year, but this is part of it too, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's going to be an element of coaching as well. Like when we do our practice exams, I think we'll put a real emphasis on insisting that body of learning shows up in those exams, no matter what the questions say, if that makes sense. I don't think we've got too much of a concern. I think the boys answer the questions, but they need to actually use their expertise to answer the questions. And we've got proof from their internal assessments that they have the expertise. So now we just have to make sure that they apply it. We had a higher overall pass rate than we've had in the last 5 years. So more students got NCEA levels 2 and 3, and we had a much higher merit achievement rate, but we had an excellence rate that was kind of on par with previous years. And so it was really obvious where our area for focus is going to be for this year.
I love that. Don't you love actually doing analysis? I mean, people would usually say, oh, writing a board report, because I'm in the throes of doing that. I've basically finished it. I was just waiting for scholarship results. But it's really good to sit down and crunch the numbers and look at where things fell over or you did things well and how you can make that difference. So I'm interested to follow this year, actually. Mm.
We'll be part of my board report is also doing some comparative analysis with national reference points. Yeah. And I guess that brings you and I back to the start of this entire podcast series where we looked at the performance of boys nationally. And it's really interesting. If I screen out the females and compare our students' performance, then they're kind of world-class performers. If you include the females then on sort of national comparison basis, then we're still high achieving, but there are other schools with the predominant number of girls sitting the exams that are doing very good work, achieving very good outcomes in English. And so, again, it comes back to the boys. Another analysis I've been doing is just looking at the difference between the number of boys compared to the number of girls who are sitting level 3 English assessments. And it's been shocking to me, you know, co-educational schools with cohorts of students of, say, 300 or 400 at level 3 have maybe 20 boys doing English. Now, they might have 120 people doing English, mm-hmm. but when you actually separate out the males from, I feel like it's important to sort of name some of these statistics, although I'm talking quite generally about them because I'm not trying to identify particular schools. But the reason to name it is I feel like this is a hidden issue. I still feel like the underperformance of boys in English is never talked about, never discussed. Sometimes people will talk about the overall underperformance of New Zealand students, but they don't talk about the boys as being a particular subgroup. And I know that some people find that problematic, but ignoring it is more problematic because we're actually in a position, I think, where our boys are actually in a bit of a crisis. Statistically, I think you couldn't argue otherwise, but people have to start talking about it. I'm glad we're talking about it. We'll carry on this year talking about what we're trying to do to see boys achieve well. Mm. I've got my lava lamp strategy. You've got your scholarships. So between us.
Between us, we're taking over the world.
That's right. And we've both got our experiments running. Like you can run your scholarship program and I'll run my lava lamp and we'll see how it comes out at the end of the year.
I know you're going to get more excellences next year.
Well, it's the goal. Like it's and it's hard, isn't it? Like I think that's something that perhaps is worth raising is that as soon as you start talking about those things, as soon as you start saying we want to achieve parity between the number of excellences students get in their internals and their externals, or you're setting yourself up for failure. It's that whole risk-taking thing that people are so averse to. I mean, if we don't achieve it, then there's more to learn. And I like that phrase, you know, you either win or you learn. And I think that's a great dichotomy to replace the win or lose dichotomy because it's okay to set ambitious targets and not achieve them.
Exactly. But the thing about it is it's a target. It's not a set in stone thing. I keep working. And I mean, you often keep saying to me, you know, in some of my moments last year, oh, I wish I could make this difference now or whatever it is. And you're like marathon effort. And it's not a sprint. And I think this is also what we're talking about here is that it's not something that possibly you will get quick results to or quick results from, but I like that you have the ambition to work on it. That's part of caring for our kids, isn't it?
And it's also, I think, part of modelling the kinds of dispositions that we're asking from them. Like it's literally what we're asking them. We're saying, aim high, set meaningful objectives for yourself, set yourself on the course of achieving those things and do the mahi, like do the work that's required to get to that place.
Yeah, I've been using my father's expression with my new classes this year. I've got four classes and basically none of the boys I've taught before because I've gone 9, 11 and 13 and then a 9 drama class. So the boys I had last year are now in the years between. But I've been saying to the new students, my father's expression, start off as you mean to continue. Now, this is the thing, right? Like if you're holding yourself to a high standard, you have those high expectations, and this is what we believe as practitioners, then I'm setting that with these kids now and I'm talking to them about high expectations. We're starting here, we can only go up, but we're not going the lowest common denominator with things. So I don't think that being ambitious is a bad thing. In fact, it's the way you and I operate. So
no, and it's such a beautiful thing once it starts functioning. One of the things I like, we talked a lot in the podcast last year about routines, and I feel like the start of this year was a really great indicator of the power of that because all the students in my classes, even the many students who I'd never had before in my class, all knew the routines of my class.
Oh, I see. So part of that is the power of your reputation then too.
Exactly. And so that kind of routine and that kind of making the things that are important kind of iconic actually ultimately also reinforce themselves over time. It gets easier. Yeah. But so for example, I mean, as you know, because we've talked about it before, I shake everyone's hand as they leave. And now it's an expectation that I'll do that. It's no longer, I mean, it's almost like I don't have to do the work on that anymore. Like the boys are now waiting for that. It's how they expect me to behave. So the other thing that happens that I think I got an insight into is that once you set and establish high standards and you invest in them and insist on them, it pays you back in that people start expecting more of you. And it doesn't always have to be you producing that expectation. The expectation starts to become part of the atmosphere around you, which just further elevates the expectations and makes the job easier, actually.
Yeah, that's so true, isn't it? You know, it's like talking to some of my colleagues last year who started at the same time as me, and possibly maybe they came in too gently with kids, and that's not a judgment. That's just where they'd previously come from. And I know that there were times then things may have been a bit more challenging for them. And I always say, I come in hot.
Yeah, exactly.
And I come in hot. And exactly. I will, and that may mean that I scare some kids off, or it makes them go, whoa. But actually, they know when they get to know me that it's because I care and I care for their results. But also, it does, in the long run, like what you're talking about, make your job not only easier but better, because you're known to be this person that's going to crack the whip in a positive way, and that you're doing it because you want them to have the most success possible in their learning and their outcomes. So,
yeah, and I totally agree, and I also think in terms of that sort of coming in hot, I think we have to properly question ourselves, like. I always make students write me a letter at the beginning of the year, and
the
least imaginative thing in the world, but they have to handwrite it because I want to see everything. I want to see warts and all. Mm. I want them to try as hard as they can. It's done under these kind of high expectations situations. And then I'm encountering parents because I'm writing to the parents about the plans for independent reading and my kind of expectations of what will happen at home, et cetera, et cetera. And the replies I get from parents at that very early stage is, you know, my student's loving your class. And I'm thinking, all I've asked him to do is write me a letter. Like, I haven't actually even started teaching the boy yet. And already the boy's appreciating being in a rigorous environment and the tone of the classroom. So to think that, yeah, like sometimes I feel like I apologize too much for my strong expectations. As if somehow that's a burden to the students. When you hear it from their families, they don't interpret it as challenging or problematic. They're pleased about it. They're happy to be there. They want that from us. Whenever you actually survey them, that the first thing they always tell you is they want you to maintain high levels of discipline in the classroom. That's what they want from us.
And that's like this morning I've been ringing the boys that I had for scholarship, and that obtained the scholarships. And in some instances I've talked to a parent because I can, obviously most households now don't have landlines. Like, that's so, my God, so 80s and 90s, isn't it? Which is where I'm from. But anyway, so I've had
maybe to I need a landline to go with the lava lamp.
Yes, yeah, I think so. A dial-up, like one of those old, you know.
A rotary
but
dial.
Yes. I talked to a mother this morning to get the boy's number, and she thought it was lovely that I was ringing, but I said, honestly, it was just such a joy to teach and all this stuff. And she said, honestly, every day he had English, he would come home and talk about the things that he was learning. And it's a similar thing to what you're experiencing. It's really nice to know that that approach and our teaching is actually valued not only by the students but by the parents. But also it does mean that we are making that impact. We are building relationships. We're showing care. I know I keep repeating all these things. It's like I explicitly teach on this, don't I, about all the values that we hold true and dear to us. But I think that was a really nice experience this morning to have that conversation with one of the mums. I did have a chat with another mum as well.
I think it's actually a thing about teaching boys, because there's a tendency with boys to not give a lot of feedback themselves, so they don't volunteer a lot of feedback, and so sometimes it's easy to imagine that they're kind of quite neutral about you as a teacher. It's actually not true. It's just that they don't typically verbalize their assessment of you as a teacher, and you're probably more likely to see their passion for it actually in the form of their work rather than sort of words about their work. And so I think that's something to keep in mind when you're working with boys.
Yeah, and actually though, that's something quite nice about that though at the same time.
Agree with you. I like that. I don't want to engage in that kind of meta discussion. I just want to do the learning with them.
But I will say, and I know that you have a similar experience, and this is not me just going, wow, I'm so epic. But then when you do get acknowledgements of your teaching, God, they mean so much more, because it's like, wow, I really wasn't expecting this. One boy, he sent me, and I know I shared it with you, the most profound acknowledgement of my work in email.
What I liked about that, by the way, just to interrupt, and I feel it's quite similar in the character of a lot of the letters that I see from boys, yes, is that they typically focus not on us as people, but on what they learned. Yes. And I think that comes back to partly how we teach, but I also think it comes back to teaching boys. I think one of the secrets to teaching boys is we talk about the relationship, but it's a learning relationship. What they want is to be acknowledged. They want to trust you. They want to be treated with respect, and they want to learn. And then what they value and what they express that they value, because, yeah, I saw that beautiful letter, which was very articulate in its assessment of what he valued about what he experienced. I mean, a lot of it was just he was characterizing what it was like to learn in your class. That was the compliment he was offering you. That's winning from my point of view, is where the center of your interaction with students is their learning.
But also for me, having done my first year at Otago Boys, and of course there were times, we know when you start it in a new place, there are going to be wobbles, or there's going to be something that doesn't go the way you anticipate it will. But when I look back at how the first year went and the results my boys got, the relationships that I formed with them, the learning relationships, I should specify that, and I guess the appreciation for what I did as well, it was a pretty cool year. Like, you know, I look back and I think, wow, I made a difference in students' education last year, and that means a great deal to me. And we're back for another year to do it again. And that means that even for the podcast, I feel quite excited, because I feel like we can really focus even further in on things that we can do to make a difference. Because I guess last year felt like a bit of a whirlwind for it being my first year at Otago Boys. And now it's like I feel like I'm part of the furniture. So that's kind of cool for this venture too, because let's see what we can do.
Anyway, that's us. I'm going to teach my class, who are all battering down the door to get in.
They just want to get into the lava lamp.
Of course they do. All right. Have an excellent day.
You too. Lovely to see you.
Likewise. Bye.
It's a Boy Thing, a fortnightly chat about teaching English to boys with Gina and Chris.
It's when the teacher doesn't treat the students like their students, like, they treat them like they're kind of like colleagues.
I think what makes a good teacher is clear set deadlines, good communication, willingness to like go over topics that some of us might find confusing.